Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre podcast for the 12th of June 2016. My name is TRP Watson. This week I'm joined by Paul in London, Phil from the West End Whingers, and Gareth James. We're now going to talk about The Spoils, which is on at the Trafalgar Studios. This is a play written by and starring Jesse Eisenberg and is directed by Scott Elliott. Jesse Eisenberg might be well known as the person who played Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network. He also played Lex Luthor in Batman vs. Superman, which may not be a plus. He's joined in the cast by Kunal Nayar, who's probably best known for Big Bang Theory, and American actress Annapurna Shriram, who are both from, I believe, the original American cast of this play. They are joined by British actors Alfie Allen and Katie Braben, who's just off My Mother Said I Never Should, which was on last month. The play is about a young man called Ben who is sort of living off his father in a plush New York flat, sharing it with a Nepalese immigrant who's doing business studies, and he rediscovers his school crush is marrying a straight-laced banker, and he sets out to destroy their relationship and win her back. Paul, can you tell me more about this and what you thought of it?
First of all, I have to say this is a terrifically acted piece of work, and you always get the sense that an actor has written this because he understands how you can actually write things to actually give these actors their moments to shine. But I think the other aspect of this piece is you come away starting to understand Jesse Eisenberg a little bit more and understanding his worldview. And by that I mean that actually he presents a character here that's not unlike what you've seen on screen. He tends to play unsympathetic, irritating or annoying characters on screen, or, you know, he's the villain of the piece, as you mentioned with the Batman Superman movie. And here it's no different, actually. He's presented a very unsympathetic character. This man is wealthy. He lives in a very nice New York apartment. And what he has done is he's basically letting this other guy, who's a Nepalese business student, stay with him rent-free. And it's sort of as though they're kind of friends, but it's not really an equal relationship. And they're living together. And what you see is it's almost like this is an updating of The Odd Couple to modern times, whereas the wealthy, eccentric man is the owner of the flat and, you know, a hardworking immigrant student is the other guy. And that's what permeates throughout this piece. That's not to say that it's not just about a bromance between the two characters. There are other characters here. And actually, the piece, as it unfolds, is really about how the couples and the relationships around Jesse Eisenberg's character actually bounce off him or interact with him. And I think when you take it at that point, it's quite a really strong piece of writing and gets some wonderful performances out of the cast. The rest of the piece, and I think it is billed as a comedy of sorts, I didn't find it as such as a laugh-out-loud comedy. There were funny moments and the occasional hilarious one, but from my original expectation was that this was going to be a terrific farce and it would build up to be something quite hilarious. It doesn't turn out to be that. I don't know whether that's my expectations were wrong from the outset or that actually it may have started out to be this, but he actually found it more interesting to just explore the characters in depth. And Eisenberg's making his West End debut here. This show transferred from New York. And so apart from having quite, you know, star billing in terms of the actors, it has quite a bit of a reputation to come with it. And Eisenberg plays his character Ben, surrounded by people, and what happens is that he's walking on the street of New York one day and he has a chance encounter with an old school friend called Ted. And it turns out Ted is dating, or rather engaged to, a woman who was also a schoolmate of his, but also was the subject of a very particular sexual fantasy. And in the piece, he describes in great detail to his flatmate what the sexual fantasy was, mostly involving getting naked and having this woman called Sarah defecate on him. Now, I don't know what it is about when it transferred from New York to London. Eisenberg himself was on, I think, the Mars show this morning talking about saying the reaction is very different. And actually, I think he says that people are accepting it a lot more and getting into the piece a lot more. I don't know whether it is because, you know, the whole idea about this comic potential from the sexual fantasy is accepted more here because we're a nation of people obsessed by urban legends about glass coffee tables, or, you know, there's the work of Gilbert and George that we could refer to. But he says the reaction is much stronger here. And for me, actually, I thought, well, actually, maybe the reaction is that we're not finding it as laugh out loud because actually the comedy comes from this moment of impersonal embarrassment and sexual gratification that people might just think is quite pedestrian here. But actually, maybe it is that we don't get so shocked about this and we can then just appreciate the characters. But I think, you know, you have to say that as the two people that have joined this cast in The Transfer, Katie Braben as Sarah gives a terrific performance as this woman who is actually quite understanding and caring. She's a teacher, the character in a school for students that are, you know, one step away from jail or just coming out of jail. And her fiance, Ted, is a banker in a Wall Street bank. I think it's called White Rock rather than Black Rock in the piece. And I think what you see is, you know, he's a banker, but, you know, he's, you know, quite a nice guy. He doesn't seem to be like your typical Wall Street villain. She's a nice guy. And you're actually the only person that seems to be intent on ruining anything in this piece is Ben. But what you actually get a sense of by the end of the piece is that you kind of feel like it's these characters all worked well together and they seem to get on well. They seem to know each other's faults, but they understand them and respect them. And you kind of figure even amongst whatever has taken place over the previous 2 hours, that they'll probably be hanging out again later on. Potentially as well, the other aspect to the piece is that there's the whole thing of the hardworking immigrants. His flatmate, who is played by the Big Bang Theory actor Kuno Naya, plays Kylan. And he is studying, wants to get ahead, even thinking about joining a big Wall Street banking firm. He's dating a woman who is a intern at an emergency ward, so she's in training to be a doctor. She's Indian American. And you get this sense that, you know, everyone's doing quite significant jobs contributing to society. The only person that isn't is Ben, who is basically sitting around his flat that his father bought him and being, you know, mean to everyone and feeling sorry for himself. But I think the piece, it touches on these issues, but it doesn't go too much into it. You know, director Scott Elliott and Eisenberg have decided, you know, to keep the focus much more bright and breezier while it's raised, but it's basically left there. There's no particularly biting commentary on the state of the world, but that's not to say this piece isn't quite interesting and has some terrific performances. The other person I think I forgot to mention was Alfie Allen, who plays Ted, and he also gives the piece, you know, a series of endless enthusiasm and energy in this character who actually is quite forgiving and understanding of Ben's character, who at times you kind of think, why are these people around him? But I guess that's what friends are for.
So, Phil, what do you think about this?
Well, I had a really good time. I don't really know why I had such a good time, because Jesse Eisenberg's character is such a shit. But despite that, particularly in Act 1, you still are sort of on side with him in a strange way. I mean, I found him completely compelling to watch throughout. It's very, very funny play. There's lots of good gags, funny moments, sometimes just from his sheer awfulness, but it's also funny. His awfulness is funny. And just the way his body moved around, I found you couldn't take your eyes off him when you're on stage, because he's often doing stuff, but not overdone. I would sort of compare it to how I felt about when I saw John Malkovich in Burn This, you know, an American actor just being quite brilliant at it. And he's constructed a good play because he's a privileged rich kid. He's only got one friend, who's played by Kunal Nayar from Big Bang Theory, which I'm a big Bang Theory fan anyway. His character's not hugely different from the character he plays in Big Bang, but, well, he's bright in Big Bang Theory, but he's sort of a different kind of bright here. But I thought all five of them were really terrific in their roles. Anna Sri Ram as the girlfriend of Kunal Nayar was this very sort of elegant, quite sharp Indian woman who really doesn't get on with Ben, who is the Jesse Eisenberg character. And Katie Braben, I have seen her on stage before, but not really noticed her because I didn't see her in Beautiful. But she had such a lovely presence, and it really made sense because the character Ben had a childhood crush on her. And there's an absolutely appalling attempt at seduction in the second act, where you're kind of losing it with Eisenberg's character a bit, because he just becomes even shittier in Act 2. But you can sort of see why he's got this crush on her, and he thinks that he can seduce her in the way that he does, and it's kind of one of the best, most awful scenes I've ever seen in a play. And the audience, you could see them leaning forward thinking, you're not actually going to say what we know you're going to say, because it's that set up in Act 1. And also Alfie Allen, I thought, was absolutely terrific as the fiancé of Katie Braben's character, because he's playing against two people who are, well, I don't know if Kunal Nayar, he's born here, but he's, you know, he's American now, I would imagine. So really absolute ensemble cast. He was interspersed with some, during the scene breaks, Billy Joel piece of music. And I remember I used to really like Billy Joel and then went off him. But actually hearing it then, and it sort of really suited it well. There's a fantastic sort of almost piece of mime with popcorn during one of the scene breaks with the Billy Joel music play. And I found it kind of really put very few feet wrong in it. It was funny from the off and just really very enjoyable piece of entertainment, I thought. And you kind of come out thinking Eisenberg's a bit of a genius, both in acting and, I don't know, it's necessarily a genius play, but it was certainly an entertaining one. I really recommend it, but it's very expensive as well. But obviously the star power behind this is getting people there. It's going to be a hit, I think.
We're now going to talk about Human Animals upstairs at the Royal Court. This is a new play by Steph Smith, directed by Hamish Perry, with a design by Camilla Clark. The cast includes Natalie Dew, Ian Gelder, Stella Gonnett, Lisa McGrillis, Sargon Yelder, and Ashley Zangaza. It concerns a dystopian view of London, aren't they always, where in this overcrowded city, nature is getting out of control, and the need to kill off the mice, the pigeons and the foxes is leading to roads being blocked, areas being cordoned off, and people getting trapped. Gareth, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, as you say, it's something odd is going on, because sort of animals and birds are being culled and their habitats are being destroyed in a kind of belief that they're carrying disease. And the six characters that we have in the play react differently. Some are complying with it, some are exploiting it, some are rebelling against it, and some are just plain resigned to it, really. And as the situation gets worse, their relationships become damaged, or some of their relationships become damaged, and some of their reactions become more hysterical. So we've got Alex, who's played by Natalie Dew, who's returned from her sort of travels, not exactly a gap year, but that kind of travels, to see her widowed mother, Nancy, who's played by Stella Gonnett. And she's a rebel, because she ends up sort of chained to the railings of the park that they're trying to burn down, I think it is. Her mother seems to be more resigned to what's going on. She's just trying to get on with her life, really, so she's less involved in it. And then we have a couple, Jamie and Lisa, which is Ashley Zangaza and Lisa McGrills, who are, you know, very loved up, as it were. And their relationship kind of falls apart as he rebels by actually hiding animals and birds in his case. And she goes to work for a man who's effectively benefiting from what's happening, who is another character we see in the play. And then we have Ian Gelder's character, John, who's quite friendly with Nancy and is getting a lot of attention from this businessman, Cy, and perhaps is a bit puzzled by this attention, who's effectively Lisa's new boss. So we're kind of seeing what's happening outside through a large perspex wall at the back of the set. But what's happening inside that wall, if you like, is the reactions of all of the people to what's going on in the world. And I just really was just very indifferent about it, I'm afraid. It just didn't seem to go anywhere for me. It's trying to say something about, you know, how maybe we blame nature too much, how society can often react with a kind of hysteria and panic, overreact to hysteria and panic. But it just didn't do anything for me, and I was a bit bored, really, even though it is only about 75 minutes long.
I mean, it's luxury casting. I mean, the performances of all six of them are really excellent. And I thought the design was quite clever because it sort of surprised you. And indeed, you know, the staging, I'm sure, was okay. I just didn't feel that the play, the material, was kind of worthy of all of this kind of creative and acting talent, really. So I'm afraid I left the theatre, the Royal Court upstairs, somewhat disappointed again. And I'd only seen one play by Steph Smith before, and that was an absolutely terrific site-specific piece in Edinburgh, which I think did come to London, which was about sex trafficking, and it sort of took place in a vehicle to the venue and in an apartment house in Edinburgh, and I thought it was just a brilliant piece of writing. So I was kind of looking forward to catching up with her, because she's done a number of plays since then, but I don't think many of them have been staged in London. But I'm afraid I was disappointed by it.
The thought I came out of the theatre with was it was one of those old-fashioned Royal Court upstairs where you haven't the blindest idea what the hell's going on. And there are plays that I've seen upstairs at the Royal Court which I barely remember what they're about, but I remember sort of strange bits from them. And I thought that this play was probably going to be one of those. I mean, it's not just nature getting out of hand. It's also the idea that the animals can also be seen as immigrants or whatever section of society you don't like. That's another part of this. But I won't say I didn't like it, because the casting was so good, and as you said, and it all was of interest. But yeah, there wasn't a sort of enough bite there. It was all a bit obvious, and I'm slightly bored with dystopias these days. I mean, I know everybody does them, and it does seem to be a requirement that everybody does some kind of dystopia where everything's falling apart. It didn't grab me enough, I think. It's a pity. I mean, it has been fairly well reviewed, but I think that's on the strength of the cast. And it's not that it's a terrible play or anything. It's a well-put-together play and well thought out, and although there is a sort of mysteriousness, and you kind of always know that the animals are a scapegoat for something else, it's well written and well put together. But yes, it wasn't, I don't think, in the end, interesting enough for me to say that it was really good. I mean, it's just well written, and it's that sort of thing that they occasionally do at the Royal Court upstairs, where they're sort of almost impressionistic plays. They're not fully worked out, you know, they're not explicit in what they're talking about. There's always something going on, and it works as a play, I think. But yeah, I'm not sure that everybody, and this is not on the day I saw it, certainly, you know, whether people really enjoyed it. And I can't say that I particularly enjoyed it. We're now going to talk about Titanic, which is on at the Charing Cross Theatre. This is a production of Maury Yeston and Peter Stone's musical, which was first put on at the Southwark Playhouse in 2013. It is directed by Tom Sutherland, staged by Casper Carré, the musical director is Mark Aspinall, and it is produced by Daniel Torrento, who is a long-term collaborator with Tom Sutherland. In fact, they are a bit of almost a guarantee of quality, that team. When we originally reviewed this, the review tended to be loved the production, but weren't entirely sure about the actual musical itself. I don't know if it's changed at all since then. Phil, tell me more about this production and what you thought of it.
Well, I'm a big fan of Nine, which Maury Yeston wrote, not the film, which I didn't like, but the musical, which I've seen two or three times. I didn't really know what to expect, but I did expect to like the music. I wasn't mad on the music in that I didn't find it particularly memorable, but God, some of it was really powerful. There's a number when they're sort of sending the ship off at the beginning, Godspeed Titanic, with the ensemble work, the choral singing, was so fantastic. I was fighting back tears sort of within 15 minutes of the show beginning. I thought, oh my God, that's a pretty good sign. I thought this was really an absolutely excellent production. It's amazing. It's a cast of 20, which is pretty big for a small theatre like the Charing Cross. And they double and treble up on the parts, possibly quadruple, I'm not sure. But they do manage to sort of make individual characters that you care something about in the little bits that they each have, because obviously they're dealing with quite a lot of different things through the classes, the three different classes of the Titanic and the crew. And you kind of pretty much know from the beginning who's going to survive and who's not, obviously, but there are a few little surprises along the way. I thought the staging, it's quite a simple set, but it's a very effective set. And with the lighting and sound design, it works very atmospherically. I assume that's their normal balconies. I can't remember. I don't go there that often. The set almost seemed to extend right into the auditorium as though you were kind of in the ship anyway. I think there were some fabulous little touches at the end. The way they suggest the upending of the boat, I think, was very effective for their budget. There's a lot of costume changes. It looks quite a sort of lavish production for its frugality in a way. It must be pretty chaotic backstage with changing and constantly changing. And one actor, which is Niall Sheehy, who has to be sort of dirt rubbed onto his face. And then he's at the first class dinner party and then back as the stoker again later. So, you know, he's not only having to change, but he has to sort of rub this grime on and off throughout the show. The loading of the lifeboats, which was sort of half empty, was very well done. The third class trapped below, sort of locked below, was very well done with the staging. There's some wonderful moments. I rather liked James Gant as the first class steward and Matthew Crowe as the sort of rather fragile ship's telegrapher. He says romance and telegraphy don't mix. It's full of really, really nice touches and really, really stirring and a very good mix of different types of music, from the chorale singing to a sort of a number, which is sort of a crooning number with a singer who's actually a singer on the boat, and a rag number and various other styles throughout. You get the iceberg looming just before the interval, and that's very effectively done, and you really want to come back and see more of it. I thought the more the show went on, the more I liked it, and I was quite surprised by that. I really didn't think it was possible to do this as a show. I remember when it was on in New York in 1997, which was the same year the film came out, thinking, God, that really has to be a disaster. And although apparently it didn't make any money, it ran for about 800 and something performances and won 5 Tony Awards, including Best Musical. I think it was a very, very big production, which I would love to see a big production of this as well. It works on pretty much every level for me, and I was quite sort of taken aback by it, actually. I think they've done a great job. What about you, Gareth?
Well, yes, as you say, I mean, it's a big show that went straight to Broadway. It didn't have any tryouts in the US because of this big 3-level set. And it was actually a British director who did on Broadway, Richard Jones, who's more known here for opera work, but is a very, very, in my opinion, very, very good director indeed. But that production and the big scale thing has never turned up in this country. And this was a chamber version. This is a different version of the show, which was mounted later. And I did see this at Southwark Playhouse when they did it 3 years ago, and it just wowed me. I actually do think it's a very good score because it's more of a kind of operatic score. The choruses are just particularly good, are stunning, I think. The choral work is terrific.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think it sounds kind of quite British, really. It doesn't sound like an American musical at all. And if you didn't know it was written by American musical, you know, you might sort of have thought it was written by a Brit, even a contemporary like Howard Goodall or someone like that. So I actually think it's a very good score. I think it tells the story of Titanic well, because it covers the disaster and the reasons for the disaster. And it does that very well by pitching the shipbuilder who's on board, the ship company owner or managing director or whatever, who's on board, and the captain. It pitches them against one another in a kind of blame game during the show. And that sort of effectively tells the disaster story. But it also covers the personal stories of the people, you know, in each class on board very, very well. And I think it's the combination of disaster plus personal that works particularly well for me. When Daniel Taranto announced the season of Charing Cross Air Trial, I was a little bit nervous, because even though I'm a huge fan of the combination, the Toronto-Sutherland combination, and I think they've done just the most amazing work on small-scale musicals, I'm not a big fan of the Charing Cross Theatre, particularly if you sit in the back half of the theatre. You're quite a long way away from the stage, and Southwark Playhouse, where they're more used to working, and indeed they've worked in places like the Finborough and indeed the Landor as well, and the Union, I think. I mean, they're much smaller spaces. But actually, it worked very well in the Charing Cross Theatre, although I was sitting in the front half. And as you say, the design of the theatre has got a bit of a liner feel about it, with the sort of the two balconies and the two sort of boxes quite close to the stage, which somehow it kind of, you know, make it feel as if they were put there for this particular show. So I actually thought, if anything, it was better than at the Southwark Playhouse, to be honest. Even though it didn't have sound issues at Southwark, like a lot of other musicals have had at Southwark, the sound here was really good. I thought the staging was probably better, because the audience wasn't on three sides, which is what we had at Southwark Playhouse. And I thought that worked. I thought the costumes are particularly good. I mean, I think a lot of the quality of the production is down to the quality of the costumes, which I thought were outstanding. And about, in addition to the creative team, about half of the cast have come with it, although one, I think, swapped roles. And I think it was just great. I mean, I loved it. It moves you emotionally. It's got rousing choruses. It tells a great story. And I've done nothing in the last few days but sort of send messages to friends saying, you've got to go to this.
I've sort of been doing the same. I was at a party yesterday and people were saying, oh, what should I see? And I said, Titanic. And people just look at you aghast because a lot of them haven't even heard about it because I don't think the publicity machine on this has been very good. I mean, the night I went, the auditorium, I would say, was less than half full, which I thought was just absolutely such a shame. A bit like The Lifeboat, boat's really half full. It was maybe it's not quite a tragedy on that scale, but it deserves to be a hit. I agree with you about sitting. I mean, I was sitting in the front section, so it's good because you do get the individual stories are very, you know, nicely performed. You want to sit, be close and not too far away. I don't know what it would be like from the back, but at the moment, I would say it'd be easy to get a seat. And also, the prices are quite reasonable for this, given the scale of this production. Even the premium seats are quite reasonable. So, you know, I'd say to people, you really go and see it and don't be put off by something that you think, oh, that sounds horrific. It works. I'd like to see it again. I think because I'd like to hear the score again. I think it's one of those that probably improves on hearing and knowing it perhaps a bit more, but perhaps it does become quite memorable, but it still, you know, moved me pretty early in the show. And, you know, there's that number at the beginning where they're loading the ship and there's lots of statistics about what was taken on board, loaded. 122,000 pounds of meat, poultry and fish and 7,000 heads of fresh lettuce, which to put that into the song, I think is quite amazing. And then, of course, you get the designer, who's played by Sion Lloyd, the designer of the ship, who, as the ship's going down, sort of does a quick redesign and sings it all about watertight compartments and bulkheads, which I thought was quite a brave thing to do, and it works. It sort of just doesn't seem to put any feet wrong.
The press is really well received, and it's all 4-5-star reviews. So I was a bit surprised, I have to say, although I've been in other things in the last few days that have not been full. And I do think there's something about the summer heat and possibly now the football, I don't know, that's kind of keeping people away from theatres. Because I've been to shows that have been just as well received that are just not filling their seats, really. But this absolutely deserves to be full for the whole run. And the pricing, in addition to being very good, the season, I mean, I booked for the whole season because there was a season ticket deal. If you book for all four shows, you're not paying much more than about £20, which is well under a third of a West End show. So absolutely got to be seen, in addition to sending messages to most of my friends, I might send them via the podcast. And if you're interested in musical theatre and don't go and see this, you're completely bonkers.
Well, perhaps word of mouth will work, but it hasn't worked for Showboat, which again, you know, wonderful singing and fantastic reviews. And then they announced their closure, you know, sort of shortly after the reviews came out. But again, I think that's in the wrong theatre anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, why on earth is Showboat closing after those stunning reviews? It's extraordinary. Maybe the appetite for revivals of musicals isn't there as much as the appetite is for, well, jukebox musicals and modern musicals like, you know, Matilda. Sad, really, because this is as good as anything in the West End in my book.
We're now going to talk about The Deep Blue Sea at the Littleton, the National Theatre. This is a production of Terence Rattigan's play, directed by Carrie Cracknell, with design by Tom Scutt. Tom Scutt has given us a vaguely transparent apartment block, well, an early 50s apartment block, a large house run by a landlady who discovers Hester Collier in her room having tried to gas herself in the early morning. And they recover her. It is the early 1950s when attempted suicide is a crime. And the landlady and her neighbours are worried a bit about the consequences of this, especially when they discover that she is living under an assumed name, that her real name is indeed Hester Collier, and that she is the wife of a judge, and she's technically speaking Lady Collier. So the young Home Office man and his pregnant wife are a little bit concerned about how it's going to be seen. I should really talk about the cast because it's burying the lead a lot. We have Helen McCrory as Hester Collier. She is joined by Tom Burke as her young lover, Freddie Page, who is a Battle of Britain pilot who is now drifting. This does seem to be a trope in drama, and I think there are a few other plays where you have this idea of these Battle of Britain pilots who, having been part of the few and lauded as these great heroes, are suddenly cut adrift and almost unable to function in normal life, and it does seem to be a trope, I think, in one or two other dramas, although I can't name any offhand other than Heidi High. There is also Marion Bailey as the landlady, Nick Fletcher as the Austrian emigre doctor who has been struck off. We're not entirely sure why he's been struck off or what for, but he's been struck off the medical register. He is, I think that there is a suggestion that he's homosexual, but none of what he is exactly spelled out in the play.
I just left a comment on the site that actually was doing backstreet abortions. I don't know where they got that from, but I didn't hear any hint of that in the play. So, anyway.
The final person to mention right now is Peter Sullivan, who plays the judge, Hester's husband. This is a quality cast, and really, I mean, certainly the best Hester I've ever seen, but I've only seen this play a couple of times before. But Helen McCrory, I came away from this just thinking, engraved the Olivier now, because basically there's not a better performance that I've seen. And I don't often go off like that on a play, but this is something that Helen McCrory seems to be born for. She is very, very good as Hester. And one of the things is that the last time I saw it, the Hester, I won't say who it was, but the Hester was not very sexy, really. She was this older woman who had kind of fallen in love with the man. But Helen McCrory, you can see why Freddie's in love with her. You can see why she is so desirable. She is an intensely desirable on stage, Helen McCrory, and in this part you can see why her husband still loves her, and it's all so well done by her. But there's also really good support. Nick Fletcher, Marion Bailey, Tom Burke are very good in this. Peter Sullivan, I think, was the one I was most impressed by of the other actors. You see this conventional man who really does, you know, has always loved his wife but has never been able to show it, and he only just begins to understand the depth of his love for her once she's left. He's sort of bereft by it, but you've got the incredibly great central performance, I think, and the rest of them are up to the mark as well. It really feels like a great play, and you can see why this is often said to be Terence Rattigan's best play. It was a very good night, and there are one or two slight complaints, I think. There's an awful lot done in the dark. It's almost Katie Mitchell dark in some places. There were one or two situations where you just thought, well, you know, couldn't you put, I know you're trying to be realistic, but could you put a little bit more light on this? Overall, it is, I think, a quality production and a great central performance, I think. What do you think about it, Phil?
I pretty much agree with everything you've said. I think that, yeah, Peter Sullivan, what surprised me is that you kind of think that the husband's going to be really, I mean, he is a very stiff sort of repressed kind of character as the judge, who's her husband. But there's a sort of an inherent kindness to him, which actually makes the tragedy of the story even worse, which I think was very clever. I found the set, actually, there were times when sort of between scenes where there was a lot of business going on in the dark, and you could see the people in different levels of the house through screens. And I felt that a little bit overdone, and I found it, just because of the size of the Littleton stage, the rooms are so enormous that actually I felt if they'd been smaller, it would have been even more claustrophobic, because it's a very sort of claustrophobic drama. I agree with you about Helen McCrory. She's certainly going to get an Olivier nomination for this and could well take it, depends what else comes along this year. She does absolutely carry the show, and you can't really take your eyes off her, despite the fact that, as you say, everybody else around her is very good as well. You know, she gets to fry an egg at the end, and there was a big debate amongst us about whether she was actually doing it on stage, because we were very close and we couldn't smell it. But people we met in the circle said, oh, they could definitely smell it, because it was sort of drifting up. But I think it was the kind of symbol of her, perhaps she's doing something domestic and she's getting her life back together, but without sort of giving anything away, there's There's sort of quite a bit that happens in it and not very much. I did find the first act a little bit of a slow burn for me. I mean, it's got this very striking opening with the attempted suicide event and everybody trying to cover it up for various reasons, because as you said, suicide was illegal, which does draw you in, I think, quite quickly and introduces the characters quite nicely. So you know exactly who everybody is. You know exactly where you are. It's a very well crafted production. It was really about the only thing I could remember from it, because I saw the now Dame Penelope Wilton, but it was just dear Penelope Wilton then, Olmeda production, which I think was back in the 90s. And you do remember that opening because it's something you don't really forget. It's quite a sort of very dramatic way to open up that. But I did find the first act didn't really move me, but by the second act, I was getting moved by it. There's also a very nice 50s teapot in the kitchen. And I think that Nick Fletcher is the struck-off doctor, who's now a bookie of some sort. His rather unusual character and the rather strange sort of relationship stroke friendship that he forms with Hester as the play goes on is very subtly done. You can't quite get your finger on his character, which is quite nice, and you feel they're both sort of outcasts in their own different ways. I will just comment on Hester's paintings, which everybody's very kind about, because they're just bloody dreadful. And she's trying to sell them, and she does sort of end up giving them away, and you're not surprised. But I think the fact that they were really dreadful was perhaps the point anyway. I just couldn't take my eyes off them when apart from the time I couldn't take my eyes off them crawling.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com. The podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.